Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh, and coming up on your super summer edition of the Totally Football Show today. Tottenham find checkbook, sign player, and then, presumably feeling highly uncomfortable, send him straight back. Wilfried Zaha says ta-ra to Crystal Palace. And what is going on in the East Midlands? There's another cock-up at Forest and a possible cock-oo at Derby. There's tears at the Copa America, a gold drought at the Africa Cup of Nations. We mentioned the Gold Cup for the first time this summer, and AC Milan are dumped out of Europe like an England under-21 side. Coming at you like a visibly buzzing teenager in a PSG shirt and a bucket hat, it's the Totally Football Show. Clowns to the left of me. Jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with Duncan Alexander from Opta.
Hi, Ian. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You're looking incredibly tanned, but yeah, only in certain places.
Well, yeah, I'll show you the, I'll show you the rest later.
If you could put your clothes back on, that would be wonderful.
Well, it is quite warm. So, no, I was in France last week in the famous French heatwave. So, experienced heat.
Mainly. What were you doing there?
Cycling in the mountains. Nice. But yeah, it was. You know the John Barnes, after 90 minutes of sheer, how are you going to get thirsty? It was more like 90 seconds.
Oh, so, ouch. Yeah. That's way too energetic for me. James Horncastle's here. Hello, James.
Hello.
That's enough.
Good to see you.
Nick Miller.
Hello.
All right. And Manny Jasmi from the BBC World Service. How are you, Manny?
Hello, Ian.
Welcome.
Glad to be here. Pre-season debut.
Cool, yeah. Welcome to the Subterranean Jazz Basement.
Thank you very much.
We won't be here much longer, but it's nice to have you here. You're going to tell us all about your trip to Egypt and the African Cup of Nations a little later, but we're going to start with Spurs because you're actually a Spurs fan, and Spurs have done a signing.
They have. After more than 500 days without signing anyone, they signed Jack Clarke and then sent him back whence he came.
10 million quid, yeah. Straight back on loan. Tanguy Ndombele's come in as well, 55 million.
No, he hasn't yet, has he?
What?
No.
Producer Ben.
I don't think he has. I think any deal involving Daniel Levy and Jean-Michel Aulas has become protracted. And it's quite interesting. I think Daniel Levy, for the first time in a long time, he's on the other side of the table. He's now the predator. And if there's anyone in Europe who will levy Daniel Levy,
oh, nice.
It's going to be Aulas. And I saw quotes a couple of days ago from him, Aulas, saying if this goes on any longer, the price is going to go up.
Oof.
So
if those two were the last two remaining in a game of Texas Hold'em, who would you back to come out on that? I can't see any situation where I don't back Daniel Levy for something like this.
No, well, I think he'll get his man because Pochettino says he wants him. But I was rather sceptical about the sang-froid that was floating around surrounding this deal last week. Everyone just saying, oh, well, this is going to happen. It's not a problem. I didn't think it would be that straightforward.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. It may well get confirmed while we're here. Let's start with Jack Clarke, 18-year-old winger, played less than 16 hours of first-team football, completed 90 minutes just twice last season, but he did score twice, including this beauty against Villa.
Clark. Oh, yes. Terrific play! Oh, it is a wonderful goal!
Nick Miller, you're here. You watch a lot of Championship. Tell us more. Who is this kid?
Well, he's one of those... He's 18 and he looks much younger. Not played a huge amount of football. He's one of those footballers who he looks very skinny, but he's actually quite strong. He's got a direct winger, classic kind of plough his way to the byline and then low cross into the middle. Used mainly as an impact substitute last season by Marcel Bielsa, but a lot of Leeds fans were quite keen for him to play more, especially as the wheels were sort of coming off a little bit during towards the end of the season.
And there's a strong relationship between Pochettino and Bielsa, isn't there?
There is. I mean, presumably this is why they're trusting him to go back on loan for the season. He probably needs another season in the Championship. If Spurs signed him now, he wasn't going to really get anywhere near the first team. And obviously Pochettino has a history of not loaning players that he actually wants to keep out. So him having another season with Bielsa is probably a good reason for that.
James Horncastle, you're a man of Yorkshire. Danny Mills used to play in Yorkshire at Leeds. He said this weekend he's not Phil Foden. Not Danny Mills. Jack Clarke is not Phil Foden.
No, he's Jack Clarke.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought this needed to be pointed out. Yeah. I tell you what, he gets criticism, but he's nailed it this time. Jack Clarke,
this is very much
Phil Foden.
He's a football player. kind of way of describing someone.
We're being facetious,
he
of
plays
course,
football.
But yeah, clearly Danny Mills doesn't rate him in that category as a promising youth talent.
Well, I mean, Phil Foden is the premier English talent of his generation with Jadon Sancho. There are lots of other very promising young English players, regardless of what Eddie Boothroyd did with the under-21 team. This deal works for both parties, well, all three if you include the player as well, because I think Leeds, after the money that they've invested originally with Radrizzani and with what they're paying Marcelo Bielsa, can't really afford to go big again in the summer, so they need to kind of put the trust in young players. They're getting him back on loan. Spurs, you can understand the appeal for Clark in going there as well, because not only is it a Premier League club, but it's a club that puts its faith in young British players, and Pochettino is someone who's very good at developing them as well. I think it's a win-win for everyone involved, really.
Duncan, Tottenham's projected £55 million signing. First of all, you can say his name better than me, obviously, because you're not me.
Ndombele.
There it is.
Yeah, Ndombele will be a bigger signing than Jack Clarke in the terms that he'll probably actually play for Tottenham next season. Two seasons ago, he was in the top 10 in Europe for dribbles, which is, again, something perhaps Tottenham have missed from midfield a little bit. And he got 7 assists in Ligue 1 last season, which is as many as Mesut Ozil and Wilfried Zaha combined, which will please Tottenham fans, I imagine. But yeah, I mean, it's obviously an area they needed to strengthen. If you look at the run to the Champions League final, they were scraping around, really. So yeah, I think he's pretty proven and be a good signing.
All right, James Horncastle, you saw him play in the Champions League. What do you reckon of him?
I think it's a great signing. I think they've beaten a lot of good European competition for his signature. I think it's a great deal for Lyon as well, because they signed him for only €8 million 2 years ago from Amiens. And just picking up on what Duncan was saying about his dribbling ability, I think he's one of those guys who manages to get out of trouble. He's not a dribbler in the way that you associate wingers with dribbling, more in the kind of Moussa Dembele kind of mould. I think that's going to be quite exciting, really, because I think he's robust enough to be able to compete in the Premier League, and that ability to sort of break lines, not with passes, but with that strength and kind of coordination that he's got, makes him a definite asset. It's just weird to see Spurs sign someone.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Moving on from Spurs, Wilfried Zaha says he wants out of Crystal Palace. Mixed messages, though. He said he wants to play Champions League football and that he wants to move to Arsenal. Well, that's going to work. Gunners haven't made Champions League for 3 seasons in a row now. There is Thursday night football, of course. Incidentally, there's a fantastic series of posts from Swiss Ramble on Twitter about Arsenal's finances, which I realise even as I say it, I'm not selling it, but it is really, really interesting. So have a look at that. Zaha, though, Duncan, how good have his stats been over the last couple of years?
Well, he's pretty much been the reason Palace have been all right the last couple of seasons. They went on that losing streak 13 games in a row without him when he missed games between January 2017 and November 2018. And I think what he brings to teams which Arsenal probably don't have is kind of a wide player who puts a shift in. He fourth most tackles by an attacker last season, which is probably something you couldn't level at, say, Mesut Ozil. And he's also just involved in a lot of sequences ending goals. Only Callum Wilson and Ryan Fraser were involved in more of a team players at teams in the bottom half. So I think he is someone that will be happy to move to Arsenal, and he'll do well there if he goes.
Money, that's a lot of money coming in the Crystal Palace bank account this summer, isn't it?
Yeah, and maybe too much for Arsenal. I mean, Wilfried Zaha, as Duncan said, has been the difference between Palace staying up and going down. So, you know, quantify that in terms of money. That's what did they get last year? It must, you know, over 100 million, I would have thought.
Well, this is 150 million if you count right. The Wan-Bissaka money and obviously the projected 100 million coming in here. Is there anything they can do with that will actually compensate them for losing one of the most promising fullbacks and one of the most effective wingers?
Well, we're assuming that Arsenal have got the money.
They'll be getting a lot of money from people buying their excellent new kit, I imagine, which launched today and looks very nice.
Very nice. They might also be getting a lot of money from offloading Ozil and Mkhitaryan, who between the pair of them earn about £500,000 a week, trying to hawk them to Italy.
Good luck.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to take on their wages?
That's the problem. I think it's less of an issue with Mkhitaryan. It's more of a problem with Mesut Ozil. I don't think Mesut Ozil particularly wants to move on, because why would you when you're earning that kind of money?
Quite.
And to be honest, towards the end of last season, he did get himself back into the team. So it's a tricky one. That is an albatross around Arsenal's neck, really, you know, with little intention on his part to leave. And again, I think Arsenal would really have to, they'd have to take on a hell of a lot of those wages for him to move on. And it would probably be one of those things where you'd structure, what, a 2-year loan, 3-year loan, just spread it out.
This year's really shown, actually, you know, fans focus a lot on transfer fees, but clubs can pay transfer fees. It's wages that are the problem. Because if you change your wage structure, look at Alexis Sanchez at Manchester United, that has a massive knock-on effect. And the same with Ozil at Arsenal. Mm. You know, it's not just that player getting lots of money. It's then other players saying, well, he's on that and I'm better than him, give me more.
Manny, Zaha, though, he could be the kind of player to turn things around for Arsenal, couldn't he? He's got such spirit and character. He gets kicked up in the air every week and he still ploughs on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's something they haven't got. He's direct. He gets on with it. And now that Aaron Ramsey's gone, they'll need someone like that. But I think Palace, obviously they'll be better off with him staying, but they'd also be better off because when you think of how much money they've spent on players like Benteke and Sacco, having £150 million burning a hole in their bank balance may not prove to be the silver bullet in terms of signing players, because, you know, they've got a history of overspending on players who, Sacco's worked out, I think, but Benteke certainly hasn't. They spent, what was it, £30 million on him.
Mm.
They did have that mice infestation at the training ground. So I don't know what 150 million gets you with rent to kill, but decent, I imagine.
What's the most expensive cat you can buy?
Buy my cat, evil bastard. Side note to this story, Zaha was Alex Ferguson's final signing at Manchester United, bequeathed him to David Moyes. And this weekend was the day when David Moyes' 6-year contract finally expired.
A sad day.
I didn't really see any speculation about whether they might extend it for, you know, another year or two.
What might have been had they just locked themselves in? Where do you think Manchester United would be right now, Manny?
Right where they are now.
Yeah. 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 I think exactly.
All right. Now, you might be wondering why we've led with transfer news and not England's incredible progress through to the semi-finals of the Women's World Cup after that fantastic result against Norway. We're not talking about that in too much detail because we're not experts in women's football, and I bloody love experts. Very much the anti-Michael Gove in that. And hopefully many other respects. I wouldn't put someone on the Scottish football show who wasn't an expert in Scottish football. I wouldn't put someone on the league show who wasn't an expert in league football. All of our experts on women's football are on the offside rule. You can hear it every night on Spotify. It's been on every night there's been football of this tournament, and it sounds a lot like this.
It's producer Abby here from the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition, and we have hit the semi-finals. We are left with England, the USA, the Netherlands and Sweden. And the competition could not be hotter. Although I think the heat is getting to Lindsay Hooper the most.
The team bus is going by and I'm waving with my baguette in my hand. Oh gosh, I'm going to try and hide it now. That was a bit embarrassing.
What do you think it looks like to those players, this baguette in your hand?
It just looks like every other day because I've always got a baguette in my hand since I got to France.
For more on that, then search for The Offside Rule on Spotify to give us a listen and get set for the finale of the biggest Women's World Cup we've ever seen. That's The Offside Rule, only on Spotify.
Manny, after England's win against Norway, you tweeted, with white and bronze playing for England, struggling to think of another team which has had more than one colour in the lineup. Oh, we've got people here to answer that. Duncan, what have you got?
Well, I went fairly deep. It's a tricky one because obviously you can have colours within names. So technically, if you do that, the record is 4 by Tottenham, actually, when they had Freddie Kanute, obviously red. Yeah, I know, but this is the problem.
No, it's not the problem. It's very much a black and white situation.
Well, this team had Freddie Kanute, Jamie Redknapp, Michael Brown and Nuruddin Nebet. So even if you did accept that, which I fully accept you shouldn't, that's still 3 reds. I think probably the best one I could find was 3, Sunderland, when they had Chris Brown, Dean Whitehead, and Andy Gray all playing in the same team.
Nice. Well, James Varley says Leeds must have had AD White, Michael Brown and Paul Green on the pitch at some point. James Wickham suggested Wes Brown and Laurent Blanc, which is, you know, it's nice. Any more?
Can you name the top scoring colour in Premier League history? I was updating this chart last season because why not?
Kingsley Black?
No, Black accounts for 7 goals in Premier League history.
David White must have a few.
David White contributed to the Whites with, they've got 35 in third place. Second place is the Greys with 40. They had a good season last year.
Yeah.
Mm. But miles ahead of everyone else is the Silvers with 92.
Oh, that kind of silver. Nice. Nick Miller. Changing the subject very quickly. It's all going off in the East Midlands, isn't it? Let's start with Nottingham Forest. Martin O'Neill suddenly going. What happened there?
Oh, God. So the story is that the story that the club have certainly put out is that the players were unhappy with his methods, which is understandable given that his methods were minimal, I think.
It's always been fascinating to me that Martin O'Neill and Brian Clough really didn't get on. They didn't really like each other that much when they were player and manager, and yet Martin O'Neill has become the manager most like him.
Yeah, and a sort of pet theory is that his effectiveness over the years has declined because he is now managing a generation of players who may plausibly not have heard of Brian Clough and thus aren't particularly impressed with his anecdotes about how he won two European Cups with Brian Clough. So the story is that the Forest players weren't happy with his methods, but I also believe that the players aren't especially happy with this being kind of hung around their necks, that this is the kind of, you know, they are being blamed for the latest sacking. I mean, if the start of the coming season had gone in the same way as the sort of last few months of last season, O'Neill probably would have been sacked in November anyway. So if you're going on that kind of slightly depressing logic, then you might as well get this out of the way now while we've got a little bit of pre-season.
Manny, his replacement is Sabri Lamouchi. What do we know about him?
He's got a very undistinguished record as coach. I must say, if there's one team I really, really want to return to the Premier League, it's Nottingham Forest. Anyone of a certain age, i.e. my age, can't help but have really fond memories of them, not just under the Clough regime, but also afterwards when Frank Clark was there and Collymore and Bohinen and all those guys. But they just seem to be locked in this perpetual disastrous circle of, you know, false dawn after false dawn, or even no false dawn, just abject failure. And I don't know why they can't solve it.
Someone hug Nick. Someone hug him right now. He's not going to get through this.
But see, this is sort of the problem with Forest, is it's actually not abject failure. It's just kind of quite rubbish. No, there's not even, apart from getting relegated to League One, in League One for 3 years.
Spurts when you think, oh, okay, they're doing quite well here, aren't they? And then it all falls away, several times sometimes in the course of an entire season.
But is it not more depressing to be a Derby County fan, given that they're always so close to getting back up there? And let's not forget, they won 2 titles in the 70s as well. The look on Nick's face suggests he doesn't want to be reminded of that. Close.
I'm perfectly happy with the 2 European Cups.
What, Forest have won 2 European Cups?
They have,
should make more of that.
Someone should tell Matt Davis Adams.
1979, 1980, I'd look it up.
Derby, however, appear to be lining up Philip Cocu. Is there any truth in that?
Well, I mean, apparently Cocu is being sort of touted around for jobs. A quick look at the odds for the next Derby manager. Cocu is the favourite. Second favourite is Darren Moore, who, of course, played for Derby in their glorious 2007-08 season. So they're looking to, you know, relive the past there. And then there's Danny Cowley. Now, obviously, the odds for these things aren't necessarily a true reflection of the Derby's wanted list, but there's not a sort of really a big through line there. They're looking for, if those names are correct, they're looking at three very different managers there.
It's going to be a strange team to go into as well. Frank Lampard is actually still in charge of Frank Lampard's Derby. He's still actually in charge of Frank Lampard's Derby, though he's not taking the first day of pre-season training today. Cocu would be quite a signing, given those three titles with PSV, a point where everyone was linking him with sort of Arsenal and Liverpool.
And almost relegating Fenerbahce.
Has this tarnished his reputation so much that a move to Derby is...
It's one of those things, as we saw with Frank de Boer, where you have to be careful about picking your next job outside of Holland, because we saw with de Boer went to Inter in the wrong circumstances and suffered because of it, and then kind of rushed into his next job in an attempt to kind of save face and resurrect his career, and that was a disaster at Palace as well. So if I were Derby, but also if I were Philip Cocu, I'd be kind of quite careful in weighing up what my next move would be.
While we're talking about managers, let's talk about Rafa Benitez. He's written a long message to the Newcastle fans, which I'm absolutely not going to read out here. There's only one bit that's pertinent, really, which is a bit that says, "I wanted to stay. I didn't just want to sign an extended contract. I wanted to be part of a project. Unfortunately, it became increasingly clear to me that those at the top of the club did not share the same vision." Manny, what do you make of all this?
Well, it was inevitable. And I mean, any manager worth his salt would have a different vision from the Newcastle hierarchy. And it's such a shame because, you know, it looked like they were going places towards the end of last season. Almiron was a really good signing, and Rondon, it looked like, would stay or sign a contract to stay. And then Forest-esque, really. It's just fallen apart.
Yeah. Anti-Forest
today. Doing a Forest has become the new doing a Leeds.
I say that with pain in my heart, because, as I say, there's nothing I want more than Forest to do well.
Let's have a look at the odds, courtesy of Paddy Power, for a replacement at Newcastle. Mikel Arteta at 11-4, he'd be mad. Sean Dyche at 7-1, there's a possible there, though I honestly think that he's too prickly. And that in that kind of goldfish bowl of the northeast, I think he might make a lot of enemies very quickly. Nick, am I being harsh there?
No, not at all. Presumably Burnley would also want some kind of hefty compensation
for
him.
You think, wouldn't you?
That probably rules that one out.
James Horncastle, could you see Roberto Martinez at 15-2?
I mean, Roberto Martinez has gone from being linked with the Barcelona job to Newcastle. No disrespect to Newcastle, but I think given he's keen to finish what he started with Belgium, I think he'll stick around there, to be fair.
Manny, David Moyes is 9-1, having been relegated with Sunderland. It would be an odd choice, but not one I would put past Mike Ashley.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you're looking for the cheapest option, aren't you? And I also saw my old friend Anthony Hudson, who was the coach of New Zealand and is now coaching in MLS. He was linked, and he's the kind of signing I think that Mike Ashley would go for, because he's cheap and low maintenance and unlikely to chirp when things aren't going well in the transfer window. And that's the kind of guy Mike Ashley wants, isn't it? Low maintenance.
That's the spirit of the Newcastle fans broken, as well as the Nottingham Forest fans. Who else can we crush?
Well, we talked about David Moyes' contract earlier, and Alan Pardew's 8-year contract with Newcastle still has about a year left. So just get Pardew in for a season. The fans will be up for that, I'm sure.
All right, Nick Miller, time to say goodbye. Thank you very much.
Farewell.
But still to come, we'll hear about Manny's trip to the Africa Cup of Nations, and Jack Lang will be on the line about the upcoming Copa America semi-finals, and that's all coming up after this. Whether you're a tip-top athlete, an occasional gym-goer, or, like me, getting a bit soft around the middle as you hit your 40s, it's important to know what's going on inside your body. That's why we've teamed up with Thriver. With Thriver's smart at-home blood test kit, you can measure and track key biomarkers over time, like cholesterol, liver function, vitamin D, B12, folate, diabetes indicators, and more. Just do their finger prick test, post the sample off to their third-party accredited lab, and within 48 hours, you'll get your GP results and personal recommendations on how to improve everything from your sleep, your mood, and fitness levels, all the way to your heart health. So whether you want to understand why you've been feeling so tired lately, or just want a bit of an MOT for your body, Thriver arms you with the ability to control your own health. Find out more and get £25 off your personalised kit by entering the code FOOTBALL at thriva.co. That's thriva.co and the offer code FOOTBALL. Hey, Duncan Alexander.
Hey.
You like stats, don't you?
Well, yeah.
Get a load of this. You will love this new book called Football Hackers, The Science and Art of a Data Revolution. That is right up your strata. It's written by the German football journalist Christoph Biermann, and it's all about metrics and numbers and XGs and how it's transformed the game from just run around a bit to, you know, a bit like Football Manager. Christoph popped into the studio, and here he is.
Sometimes you can identify qualities of players before that probably didn't have numbers for. So and that's good. I mean, because I mean, Özil is a good example because he is very controversial. But probably you identify overseen players, so that are not very spectacular or play with smaller teams and have this quality. And so again, it's better to have data than not, and it's better to have intelligent data than not.
Well, if you enjoyed that snippet, we'll be putting out the full conversation on Wednesday. The book is called Football Hackers, and it's out now. James Horncastle, you've read it, haven't you?
I have. Sensational.
All right. Yeah, that's going on the back of the book.
I heartily recommend it. Unfortunately, there are already blurbs on there, which are not.
Yeah, but it's probably going to get a second edition, so this is your time to get.
Yeah, I think it probably will. No, it's super. Lots of insightful detail in there. Takes you really behind the laptop.
Really want that cover quote. Well played. Yeah. I'll tell you what, now it's time for the classified football results. Colombia, 0. Chile, 0. Uruguay, 0. Peru, 0. Mauritania, 0. Angola, 0. Cameroon, 0. Ghana, 0. Benin, 0. Quite the weekend of football. They were the scores after extra time on Saturday in the premier competitions for two of football's most exciting continents. Things got much better on Sunday with another win for the hosts, Egypt, 2-0 against Uganda. Dr. Congo beat Zimbabwe 4-0. Madagascar's shock 2-0 win against Nigeria means that the Malagasy, for that is how you say it, thank you, Manny, playing in their first ever AFCON, are through to the last 16. Manny, you were in Egypt last week for the BBC's World Football Show, which you can hear on the World Service, a very excellent podcast, often featuring our own friend Pat Nevin. What the hell's going on with Madagascar? How is this happening?
Yeah, it's extraordinary. I mean, they had a reasonably good chance of going through because of the format, 24 teams, so in four of the six groups, the top three go through. But there's no way anyone expected them to be top. It's amazing. You know, their coach combines managing Madagascar with managing a team in the fourth division of French football. It's the one of the unhappiest countries in the world, Madagascar, because of its poverty. And I don't know if they were dancing on the streets of Antananarivo after they beat Nigeria, but they should have been, because now they've got a real chance of getting through to the quarterfinals, because they'll play one of the one of the third place teams in the next round. While Nigeria, it looks like they're going to be up against Cameroon or Ghana in the second round. And, you know, that's more of a clash between two big names than it is between two great teams, because Ghana have sort of stumbled and struggled along. Cameroon haven't been great. No one's really been great so far. We haven't really seen a team that you think, all right, okay, they're the ones to beat. And that's partly because of this format. Is very difficult to judge who the best teams are, except for when they play the second best team in their group. But yeah, big shock for Nigeria. They rested some of their players. They were already through before the game, but nobody was expecting them to finish anywhere other than top in a group with Burundi, Guinea and Madagascar, but that's what's happened.
All right, more drama over with Egypt as well. Amir Wada kicked out of the squad, and with some justification, you'd think, but now he's back.
Yes, Amr Warda was kicked out of Egypt squad last week because several women have accused him of sexual harassment online. But then a couple of days later, he was back in the squad, albeit he was suspended for games in the group stage. So he can't play. Well, he can play now because they've played their last group game. And it's thought that was because the senior players in the Egypt team asked for him to come back. They won their second game, and El Mohammadi, their captain, made the 22 sign to celebrate the goal. That's his shirt number. And but the big thing really that got everyone talking, apart from the sort of disbelief that he was allowed back in after he apologized for. He's been accused of doing. The big thing was that Mohamed Salah did something very rare for him and actually put out a statement in support of him. But it was a statement that you thought was probably written by a PR kid, probably who works around the corner from here, probably he's called Jez. It was the least sincere and footballer, you know, it was none of that, not a single word of that you can imagine coming out of any footballer's mouths, let alone Mohamed Salah, who just 2 months ago came out very strongly, you know, in favour of feminism and women's rights and equal treatment and that sort of thing. But this was a completely the opposite message. He said that, he started by saying, of course, it's wrong to sexually harass women. But then he launched into this thing about how everyone deserves a second chance and nobody should be taken to the guillotine. So that hasn't gone down well. Egypt is a very, very chauvinistic country. In 2013, a UN study said that 99% of Egyptian women have suffered some form of sexual harassment. Quite often, even more serious offences are swept under the carpet. So Egyptian females and Egyptian female football fans are up in arms about this. But, you know, you wonder what would happen if Amr Warda comes on the pitch. He's not a first team starter, but if he comes on and scores the crucial goal in one of the knockout games. Football is so fickle, isn't it? You don't know what the reaction will be, if people will temporarily forgive him for this or not. But it was the big story of the first week, and it hasn't reflected well on the players, hasn't reflected well on Salah, and it certainly hasn't reflected well on the Egyptian Football Federation.
So Manny, what is it like out in Egypt? What are they like as a host? How excited are they?
Well, Egypt, I'd never been to Egypt before in any capacity, and I didn't realise how obsessed they are with football. And they really are. It's what you might describe as a proper football country. And, they're getting the stadiums packed for their games. And I haven't been to any of their games. But speaking to people who have, you know, whenever Mohamed Salah scores, it's almost like a religious moment for anyone who's inside the stadium. It's feverish. They're really excited about hosting. They only got the tournament 6 months ago. Typical CAF, they gave it to someone who they didn't choose initially to host it, Cameroon. And there's a lot of excitement. They went through their group with 9 points, no goals conceded, but possibly the least convincing 3 wins out of 3 that's ever happened in a tournament anywhere. There are holes in their defence, and they'll be tested at some point, I'm sure. But in terms of the people, it's hot, it's really hot, and you know, they're warm-blooded, typical Middle Easterns, a bit like me, and obsessed with football. And it's great to be in a country that is like that when they're hosting a football competition.
Now, we should explain to our listeners at this point, Manny, that you're registered blind.
Well, I am blind. Saying I'm registered blind is a bit like saying that I signed up to it but didn't pay for the subscription.
Did you pay for the subscription? We have ways
every
of
month,
checking these things.
Every month.
So how do you experience games?
I hear the atmosphere. Well, if I go as a fan, I either usually take a radio with me if it's a game where I think there's going to be commentary, and so I find out what's going on the pitch that way. Or if I go with friends, they'll tell me. There was one time I went to Spurs many years ago, and I was hoping there would be commentary, but there wasn't any commentary. And I thought, shall I stay? Because it was the end of the season, and this was the old days when Tottenham didn't have anything to play for from about December. And there was a guy next to me who, some reason, must have sensed this, and he just spontaneously commentated for me for the entire game.
That's outstanding.
Isn't it?
That's brilliant. Was it a good commentary?
It was a good commentary. Terrible game, which was a shame, but it was a great commentary.
Did he sort of take it off in directions as well as talking about the game? He talked about, the weather and the nice bit of cake it had.
He didn't do any of that. He's stuck to the pitch.
It was always very much a staple of Roy the Rovers, wasn't it, that the crowd would do the commentary. Yeah. They'd be like, oh, race is good from this range. I wonder if he'll have a shot.
Clean through. Final word on AFCON, Manny. Which teams have impressed you the most?
Algeria and Morocco so far. As I say, it's difficult to judge at this stage, but Algeria, they both beat the second best teams in their group. Algeria beat Senegal, who are the top ranked nation in Africa, and Morocco beat Ivory Coast. But you can tell why no African teams went beyond the group stage at the World Cup last year so far. The days of the superstars, you remember the AFCON used to be absolutely littered with great names. It isn't anymore. There's Salah and there's Mane, but big names, that's about it so far. But I suppose, if you want to take a positive view of it, there's a blank canvas for someone to step up.
Well, absolutely. Moving on to a different tournament, you tweeted that Mexico-Costa Rica in the quarterfinal of the Gold Cup, that had by far the best atmosphere you've heard in any of the tournaments this summer.
Definitely.
Here's a taster. Gestos de nerviosismo prepara. In South America, things are starting to get pretty tasty as Copa America moves into the semi-final stage. Argentina will play Brazil on Wednesday. That's worth staying up for. And Chile will take on Peru on Thursday. Sounds pretty tasty. Here's Jack Lang to tell us more.
Jack, what's been funny to observe over the last few days? Argentina making it to the semis, or Luis Suarez leaving the field in tears after missing a penalty?
Having Argentina in the semi-finals isn't that funny. It's good, I think, for the spectacle of the tournament to have a real standout game. The quarterfinals, I guess washout would be a bit strong, but it certainly wasn't amazing entertainment. Two goals across four games, that's the lowest ever at this stage of the tournament. By a long way as well. I think the previous lowest was seven in 2011. Three goalless draws, all of which resulted in penalties. It's a bit of a quirk of the rules that there wasn't extra time in the quarterfinals, which I'm not really sure why. It's a bit stupid, but in the end, it saved us an hour and a half of more turgid football. So I was quite pleased for that in the end. Suarez crying, I suppose that was quite funny. But then he's been one of the characters of this tournament, as always, appealing for a handball by the goalkeeper in the Chile match. That was a good laugh, and trying to get someone sent off for hacking down a streaker. So he's been typically involved. But seeing him going out like that will have tickled Cumbin for sure.
And finally, Jack, during our conversation, we talked about the poor attendances and the poor atmospheres at the games. This weekend saw a distinct lack of goals. Why has this been such a poor Copa America? And is there hope, though, that it still might yet come good in the end?
Yeah, I suppose it has been a fairly mediocre competition. When you look at the big teams underperforming, you look at fairly defensive football, poor ticket sales. Brazil v Argentina is the big hope of it springing into life. That is definitely a fixture that everyone wanted to see at some point. And it might not be a bad thing that it's coming to semi-final rather than final, because it might mean there's a little bit less nerves and tension. We might actually get a bit more football out of it. Why it's been a bad tournament? Well, there's been a lot of talk about the pitches. That hasn't helped for sure. The actual quality of the grass in some of the stadiums. Beyond that, tiredness for a lot of the players coming in off long old seasons. And remember, this is the first Copa America in 2 years in a row they're going to be again, having already had two in a row in 2015 and 16. So perhaps a little bit of summer tournament overkill, you might say. But then beyond that, there's the broader strokes of the development of South American football compared to European football. There's Jorge Valdano, who's been writing in El País, has said that South American football just feels like a almost like a satellite operation. The ideas from European football really take some time to get over here. And most coaches, their idea of balance here is putting 9-10 men behind the ball and looking for one or two to create some magic. So once you consider that Argentina haven't won any major trophy for years and years, and they're maybe not producing as many young players as they used to, Chile's golden generation is coming to an end, even though they've done well. And you know, other countries are kind of building under new coaches. That's the case for Colombia, for Chile, for Paraguay, for example. There's a lot of flux, and it means that there has kind of been a short-termism that's become endemic in South American football, because all these teams have had so many coaches in such a short amount of time. So maybe it's a cultural thing.
Producer Ben speaking to Jack Lang there, live fish in a Rio shopping centre. Oh, the glamour. Jack is covering the Copa America for The Athletic and working on his tan. And you can keep up with him at Jack Lang on Twitter. That's J-A-C-K-L-A-N-G. And having spent a week in Casa del Muddy in Porto with Jack, I can tell you that his moustache and short shorts make him look like he wouldn't be out of place in a Panini sticker album circa 1984. Which is a nice way for us to move to this. Panini is the original and best name in sticker collecting, and they're now a partner of the Premier League. That means you can look forward to both the Premier League official sticker collection and Adrenaline XL Premier League trading cards very, very soon. But right now, you can get your hands on the brand new Premier League Panini tabloid sticker collection, celebrating the highs and lows of the 2018-19 season. Yeah, it's the 21st century now, and this Panini album comes with QR codes, which give you access to exclusive video clips of the season's most dramatic and sensational moments, like Andros Townsend's worldie against Man City, Kevin De Bruyne's stunning assist to Raheem Sterling in a return fixture, and Jordan Pickford's brain fart in the 96th minute against Liverpool. There are 5 stickers in every pack, so how about kicking off your collection with a starter kit, which includes an album and 20 stickers for just £3.99. Find out more at panini.co.uk, that's P-A-N-I-N-I.co.uk, and follow them on Twitter at @officialpanini, on Instagram at @paniniukofficial, and use the hashtag GotGotNeed. James Horncastle, I need you to tell me what's going on in Italian football. AC Milan thrown out of Europe?
Yes, Ian. They have been punished for transgressions of their, well, former two owners. Breaches of financial fair play under Silvio Berlusconi slash Mr. B. Remember the Thai guy who said that he wanted to buy Milan, so they went and spent money ahead of him taking over the club, and then he didn't take over the club. That wasn't good. And then Lee Yong-hong took over instead, paid an absolute fortune for Milan with a load of debt, lost control of the club, having spent a fortune on players as well. So this is the tab, I suppose, that Milan's new owners, Elliot, a hedge fund worth about $35 billion, Ivan Gazidis, have had to pick up. So the deal that they've kind of done is rather than be punished again, they've looked at these two cases and say, can we just merge them into one? We'll be out of Europe for a year, that's fine, but as long as we get a little bit more breathing space to break even in the meantime, that's something that we're willing to take. So that's the agreement that they've come to. But yeah, it doesn't mean that Milan can go and spend as they wish this summer, because look, if they have aspirations to be in the Champions League next season, they'll come under a monitoring period again with UEFA, pretty much from January onwards. But it doesn't look good, I would say, for a team that has won the Champions League, has defined itself by winning the Champions League on more occasions than any other team apart from Real Madrid. To be not only thrown out of Europe, but kind of the Europa League is not great.
That's the final insult, isn't it?
But, I mean, this has dragged on and on and on to the point that Roma basically was supposed to be on tour in the US and have had to withdraw from that. They then, decided that they were going to go on tour within Italy in Pinzolo, but they had to withdraw from that, so they've lost money. They go into the group stages of the Europa League, which is where Milan were supposed to be competing. And Torino have basically been told, right, you have to get off the beach, fly back home as soon as you can. we've got some Euro qualifiers coming up.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's had quite a lot of repercussions, not just for AC Milan.
Okay, Inter. In the meantime, Conte's manager there, of course. How's he getting on trying to sign Romelu Lukaku?
I think they will sign Lukaku. I think at the moment, today, it's July 1st, which is a new contract year in the world of football. So we've seen Inter announce Diego Godin today, another one of their freebies to follow what Stefan de Vrij last year. But yeah, they want a new centre-forward, maybe two. And they've been linked with Lukaku, who's definitely the more expensive of the pair. The other is Edin Dzeko. The issue that they've got is offloading Mauro Icardi, because even though he is, what, top 10 all-time top scorer for Inter in all competitions, two-time top scorer in Serie A, still in his prime, no one wants to go near him after everything that went on last year. So Inter definitely need to bring in some funds in that regard if they are to get that Lukaku deal over the line. But Lukaku, as we saw on Instagram, wearing black and blue basketball jerseys, and yeah, very much signalling where he wants to be.
Come and get me, please. Juventus, three names linked. De Ligt, is it done yet?
It's not done yet, but it's practically done.
All right. Gianluigi Buffon.
Wow.
Nah.
Buffon is coming back, another free transfer. Juventus will make three this summer. Adrian Rabiot is having his medical as we speak. Aaron Ramsey has been announced, but we all know that. And Buffon will rejoin the club on a free to...
How do we think Chesney's going to feel about that?
Chesney loves Gigi. I don't think he sees this as a challenge. I think in some respects this is quite a shrewd move for Juve to, let's say, bring in some money, because the backup goalkeeper, Mattia Perin, who came in last year, did not get as much game time as he thought. He believed he could push Chesney for the number one spot, was unable to. I think Juventus are looking for maybe to get 20 million for Perin, which will go some way to signing De Ligt. And Buffon's just basically going to sort of stand around, clap, hope they win the Champions League,
nice,
and then move upstairs.
I'll be happy with that. Yeah. What about Burnley's Dwight McNeil linked with a move to Juventus?
Yeah, so the first I heard of this was when I came into the office today and you brought up the name of Dwight McNeil. So, yeah, I can't give you any kind of detailed reporting on that. It's something that I'll endeavour to do when we get off the podcast, but
possibly not one to bank on.
He's the only teenager to start a Premier League game for Burnley.
That's outstanding.
He is young enough to be Buffon's son, although I'm
most
informed he isn't.
Yeah. All right, we've just about got time to mention the under-21s, which came to an end last night. Final between Germany and Spain. Who saw this?
I did.
Hello. What happened? I did not see that.
Spain won.
Oh.
In Udine, and they were deserved winners as well, not just in the game, but I think in the tournament as a whole. Really bounced back from that opening day defeat to Italy in Bologna. I think, again, Spain just showing that, well, this century, they are the team when it comes to producing talent. They are the country, because by winning the under-21s, it's their fifth title. They go level with Italy, who very much made this competition their own in the 90s. But you look at some of the midfield talent in this Spain side, Fabian Ruiz, Dani Ceballos. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Ceballos this summer.
In 2013, they won it, of course, with De Gea and Isco,
Morata.
Is there anyone in this team you think will be that good?
Well, Ceballos was the player of the tournament 2 years ago, moved to Real Madrid, and hasn't really had much of an opportunity to show what he's made of there. And I think that's why there's going to be interest in him moving on. I think he wants to make it at Real Madrid, but realistically, I think in order to get the kind of game time he needs to develop, he has to go elsewhere. And the player of the tournament this time around was Fabian Ruiz, who Napoli signed from Real Betis last summer. And very much, I think, the complete midfield player. You know, we've seen that not only in Serie A, but the Champions League, someone who can play all over midfield and contribute in a decisive way. So I think Fabian is... Napoli already looking to extend this contract and take the buyout clause out of it, because they recognise that he's a very big talent.
Duncan, terrible tournament for England. Adi Boufroid, what would you put his survival hopes at?
Well, you'd think he wouldn't have many. But the problem with under 21
in football, that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, God.
But he's very much a, you know, an FA man, and he's done some good behind the scenes work. But obviously, England came into the tournament with high hopes, and defensively, particularly, looked pretty ropey. So you'd imagine that he might get shifted before the next tournament.
All right. Well, that is it for another summer edition of the Totally Football Show, unless anyone's got anything to add.
One thing is Wimbledon starts today,
yeah.
And I'm not a huge tennis fan, but I like football, so I tried to find a connection. And the only team in English league history to record three results in a row that would win you a Grand Slam men's tennis match, Plymouth in 1925. They ended the season with a 6-0 win and then started the following season with two 6-2 wins. So 6-0, 6-2, 6-2, progress through to the next round.
You are a very, very special individual. Thank you very much for being in our lives. Manny, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for having me.
If people want to follow you on Twitter, what do they do?
They follow at @BBC_Manny, and I mean, you already do, but if you don't for some reason, then the podcast The World Football is out on Friday.
That's The World Football Show, with you and Pat Nevin from time to time, and
Heather O'Reilly, former USA international gold medal winner.
Excellent.
And Peter Rodden Wingy as well.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, there's a very obvious joke I can make there, and I hope everyone respects me for not making it. Coming up this week on the Totally Football Show feed, Alvaro Romeo and Michael Cox talking tiki-taka and Spain's World Cup and Euro winning sides of 2008-2012. Listen to that, and buy Michael Cox's book, Zonal Marking. Good luck to England this week. Remember, the Offside Rule is the only place for all your Women's World Cup needs. It's only on Spotify. It's ad-free. It's absolutely free. You can download it to your phone. You don't even have to stream it and use up your data. So get all over that and keep up to date with all things Totally Football by following us on Twitter at The Totally Show. See you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really. And here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK. So that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5 p.m. till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.